James 3. My brother, be not many masters. Of course, that's talking about teachers. Knowing that we, teachers, shall receive the greater condemnation. The greater condemnation. There is a burden to be borne by those who would teach, because people are greatly influenced. How many of us have ever been taught something that turned out to be wrong? All right. I don't mean there was just a better way. You know, sometimes we've learned along the course of our lives, somebody taught us how to do something, then somebody taught us a better way to do that same thing. I'm not talking about that. You know, as long as it comes out the right way, who cares the process to get there? It should be just the most efficient. But when it comes to information, particularly, and of course James is talking about biblical, spiritual, and godly information, that burden that we bear is that we can lead people in the wrong direction. There are people who have been baptized because they thought that was how they would get to heaven. They didn't have their faith only in Christ, but also in the church's ordinance of baptism. There are people who give, not because they just want to be generous, but because they felt they were obligated to give in order to get to heaven or to be in God's grace some way. And we could go on and on. I see people regularly serving, not out of a desire to share and not out of an enthusiasm of our message, but out of a burden that they have to do it in order, you know, because what if Jesus comes back and I'm not working, then I won't get to go. And by the way, for many years that was taught in a lot of churches. And when the Lord comes back, if you're not, you know, right with God, then you'll be left behind. Now, you say, Pastor, I still believe that. Man, maybe that's the case. But the tribulation is toward the world in regards to Israel, not toward the church. And so we've got to be careful about what we teach, and especially what we teach dogmatically. It's one thing to say, here's the information, you know, absorb it and process it as you will. But the Bible is not clear on some things that the church chooses to argue about. And so where the Bible is silent, we should be too, or at least express that it's our opinion and not teach it as a doctrine or a fundamental of our faith. And also he says in verse 2, in many things we offend all. As teachers, sometimes we offend people. As I preach, there are things sometimes in the Bible that challenge us. Not only does it challenge our actions, but it challenges our comfortable opinions. We get comfortable with what we believe. And maybe we would prefer to have a teacher or a preacher that would just get up and reinforce what we believe. And if he comes across something that disagrees with what we believe, just skip over that part. But a true teacher will not only address the things that we believe, but will challenge us on our beliefs, especially when they're questionable or wrong. And so when we come across those things that are unclear, we have to dig deeper and give a good explanation. But in many things, we offend all. And that will probably continue to be the case and increase, as we grow farther along in this election cycle, because people have chosen sides. I don't know that there's anyone undecided even at this point, 8 months out. But we have to be honest with ourselves and honest with others. about the direction of our country. Now, some would say it doesn't matter who you vote for. It doesn't matter who the president is. None of that stuff matters. That no matter which wing you vote for, it's on the same bird. You know, I've heard that one. But no doubt, because the standards and principles and morals of our country will be discussed in the next 8 months, no doubt it will come up in here. Not in the point of choosing sides, not in the point of telling you who you should vote for, but being clear about right and wrong. And I've said for years that you don't have to name a candidate. All you have to talk about is standards and principles, and it won't take long till people figure out which side is right and which side is wrong. But in many things, we offend all. So that's, you know, if you're going to teach, if you're going to lead, you're going to offend. If any man offend not in word, verse 2, the same is perfect. A perfect man. He doesn't offend anybody by what he says. He's perfect. No, he just doesn't tackle the tough issues. He avoids it. And he's also able to bridle the whole body. Here's the thing. If we can control our words, that shows a self-control, the ability to control any part of our body. Because words slip out, don't they? Anybody ever had a word slip out? I've told you about a pastor friend of mine worked on the, he's a welder in the shipyard. And the language that he would hear throughout the day, you know, all day in his ears. And he said he was driving home one day and somebody cut him off. That's a preacher. I mean, a Christian man. And he said that word that he'd been hearing all day found its way through his ear to his heart and was coming up off his tongue. That word. He said, I caught it right at the last second before it came out. But it was there. It was present. And it was finding its way out. But he caught himself. And so think about that. Sometimes we bite our tongues and sometimes we say, oh, I should say that. But then we convince ourselves to go ahead and say that. It turns out we shouldn't have said it. And so we've got to have that self-control, that ability to bite our tongue. Because if we can control our words, then obviously we have self-discipline. He says we put, verse 3, bits in the horses' mouths that they may obey us. And by that, we turn about their whole body. Also, ships, though they be so great, are driven of fierce winds. Yet are they turned about with a very small helm. Whithersoever the governor or the captain decides to turn it, wherever he listeth. Even so the tongue is a little member and boasteth great things. The tongue has a great control, doesn't it? How many of us have ever been humbled or even humiliated by our own words? How many of us can think of a time when we said something and it still embarrasses us that we said that? Right? The tongue. My tongue. And by saying that sentence or phrase or whatever it is, he says it is a little member, but it boasteth great things. It has great influence. How great a matter a little fire kindleth. It only takes a spark, right? Only takes a match. Only takes one thing. A word, a phrase, a sentence, a conversation. It can change friendships. It can change marriages. It can change family situations, relationships. One word. One statement. And sometimes people say, I didn't mean to say that. And we'll say, well, but it was in your heart or you wouldn't have said it. And so we penalize people because they have a lack of control over their words. And we are penalized. Verse 6, the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members that it defileth the whole body and setteth on fire the course of nature. And it is set on fire of hell. Some of the things that we say come straight from hell. That's what James is saying. It was a bad idea. And it never should have been in our heart, in our mind. And it certainly never should have been in our words. One of the phrases, and I've probably said it enough now here that y'all know why I'm so happy. Why am I so happy? Y'all don't know the answer to that? Because I know how to mind my own business. It's amazing what people will, they will draw us into their drama if we let them. And the best thing we can do is stay out of it. We can see trouble, we can identify trouble, but we don't have to speak to trouble and we don't have to engage in the trouble. I said the other day in a certain situation that came up, I have pity. You know, we talked about that Wednesday night, didn't we? That we are, as a church, we're supposed to be, he said, pitiful. We're supposed to have pity, but I don't have sympathy. Now, you can work that around in your mind and see what you think of that statement. I feel sorry for them, but I see that they did it to themselves, and they're doing it to themselves. And as much as I pity that they're in that situation, I can't help them. And I'm not going to spend my wills and my energy trying to help somebody that won't be helped. And I've told you, and this is years ago, but this fella comes to mind, and I loved him. He is my friend. He's in heaven now. But he would come and sit in my office for hours, call me on the phone, and talk for hours. And we would talk about the problem that he was having in his relationship. And we would come to this is what we need to do. Yep, this is what I need to do. All right, good. I'm glad I called you. And by the way, I let him talk it out. I don't tell people what to do. I just let them work it out and get to their conclusion. But when he would hang up or leave the office, the conclusion was a resolution, and that would solve the problem. And usually it came back to get away from that woman. Right? It was just a girlfriend. It wasn't his wife. Get away from her. And here we would work. I mean, it would take us an hour to get to that conclusion. Sunday morning there, they'd be sitting in church again. Right? And so what did it do? All it did was waste my time is all it did. It didn't solve anything, didn't change anything, didn't change his mind. I'm a minister. That's what I do. I listen. Don't feel bad if I listen and then you do what you're going to do anyway, because that's what's going to happen. And I know that. It's part of the job. All right? So I will listen. Don't think, oh, the preacher's going to be mad. No, I'm not going to be mad, but I'm not going to spend another hour with you on Tuesday night on the phone so we can come back to the same thing. But that's what happens. And so I mind my own business. I minister, I listen, I hear, I let you talk, but I know what the limit is as to what I can solve, what I can fix, and what I can help, and what I can just stay out of. If we don't know that, what will we create? Frustration. That's all it does, create frustration. I know, that's right. So just don't create frustration for ourselves. Look, he's saying that our words can make a difference. Our words can make a difference. But our words can cause a lot of problems. And so we have to be careful. And I say this over and over again. When a couple is fighting, when they're separated, when they're having problems, and not just a couple, when it's somebody and their parent. Had somebody call me this week, you know, talking about their mom and the situation there. And what do you want me to say? I know you don't want me to say bad things about your mama, right? And I'm not going to say bad things about your husband or your wife or your children. I'm just not going to run them down. I might listen and let you run them down, but I'm not going to pack on. You know why? Because then when y'all are friends again, you're going to say, you know what the preacher said about you? I'm not going to do it. By the way, I've had people call and say, you know, my boyfriend or my husband or whatever it was said you said this. And I threatened to start recording those phone calls. I don't, but I threatened just so I can have evidence. But but I'm not doing that. But the point is that sometimes people, what they say, they project as we said it. Be careful. Because our words, he says, can set on fire the course of nature. And sometimes those words come straight from hell. Verse 7, every kind of beast and birds and serpents and things in the sea is tamed and has been tamed of mankind. Isn't it incredible that we can train a dolphin or a killer whale but can't control our own mouth? Verse 8, the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. Again, James is saying this, and this is the brother of Jesus. How many times, when we look at the record and see, they said to Jesus, "Why don't you go to the feast? Huh, holy man, holy preacher, why aren't you at Jerusalem right now?" And Jesus said, "Y'all go on without me." But they were trying to pin him down, his brothers. And now here's James talking to us about making sure we say the right thing. Why? Because he's got experience. Because he's said things that he regrets. And now, even as a believer, having been converted, now he says, even those who have faith in God, even those who are faithful to God, even we sometimes let words and phrases slip out that shouldn't. The tongue, he said, no man can tame. It's an unruly evil full of deadly poison. And hopefully, I won't ask you to raise your hand, but hopefully we have trained ourselves pretty good on this, pretty well, so that we don't say things we shouldn't say. But how many of us said something this week that we regret? Sometimes even just being funny. We thought it was funny, meant it to be funny, but it hurt somebody's feelings. Sometimes that happens. Verse 9, therewith bless we God, even the Father. Therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceeds blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. Does a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries, either a vine, figs? So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh. Who is a wise man, endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. Wisdom. His words. Self-control. Verse 14, but if you have, look, bitter envy and strife in your hearts, glory not, lie not against the truth. He says if it's in you, you can identify it. How many of us are good at self-assessment? Think about that. Are you good? Are we good at looking in the mirror, not just in the glass mirror, but in the spiritual mirror, and look at ourselves and of our character and evaluate, am I really in control of myself, of my words, of my actions? Am I really living in this Christian life of grace and discipline, or am I reckless and sinful and hateful, and do I have bitterness? You know, do I lose my temper? Do I speak sharply, unkindly toward people? Do I gossip about people and say ugly things about? Do I lie? Right? Am I deceitful? Are we good at evaluating ourselves? I tell you, that's why it's so important that we have people around us that will be honest with us. We may not like it and appreciate it all the time, but we need those people in our lives to tell us when we're wrong. How many of us like to be told when we're wrong? But how many of us like being wrong? We don't. And if we don't like being wrong, then we need somebody to tell us when we're wrong so we can get right. He says, bitter envy and strife in your hearts. Glory not and lie not against the truth. Don't pretend it's not there. For this wisdom, verse 15, this wisdom descends not from above, but is earthly, sensual, and devilish. What wisdom? The wisdom of bitter envy and strife and deceit. Sensual, it's devilish. Where envy and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. Envy and strife. So how do we avoid envy and strife? How do we get envy and strife out of our lives? I'm going to wait for y'all to give me the answer. What's that? Die. Right here, so that's it. The only way, just be dead. Prayer. What? Okay, staying in the Word. What causes envy? Greed. Okay, so what causes jealousy? Sin, the devil. I can't control the devil, though, okay? Comparing ourselves to others. Social media, right? Self-doubt. And really, when we talk about self-doubt, really what is that but intimidation? We're intimidated by others. So what I've got to do if I want to get rid of the envy is I've got to see myself as God sees me. And yes, God sees that I am imperfect and all my failures and all my shortcomings, and He loves me anyway. And I'm created in His image and for His purpose. And He can use me in spite of my shortcomings. So if I can just accept who I am in the Lord, then I can avoid all that envy and jealousy. But when I'm trying to live up to be this image that I have imagined, when I'm not humble, when I'm not submissive, when I'm not surrender, you know, when I've got to be the big boss or the, you know, I've got to be the smartest person in the room or the best looking person in the room or the strongest person in the room. When I've got, again, goes back to comparison, when I compare myself to others and I've got to be just an edge above them, then that's going to create intimidation and jealousy. Why? Because I know in my heart I'm not. Well, actually, you appreciate me for it, right? So it's not that you're really envying me. You appreciate it. Well, but envy is, it brings a little bit of, again, intimidation. It brings in a negative slant to it that says, I want to be as good as you. You're not as good as you think. And I'm glad you brought that up, because what happens is when, if we realize we're not as good as somebody else, what do we do with them? Unless we appreciate them, we minimize them. We diminish them. We dismiss them. We criticize them. Well, I don't know why he thinks he's so big about it. He thinks he's so smart. That's envy. But appreciation is I admire, okay, or admiration. I admire your ability to interpret this and understand this in a positive way. We're not using it in a positive way today. So we'll say admiration or appreciation. And so I hear what you're saying. But envy is to want advantage over. So if I envy you, envy and jealousy, here it's used in a negative way. Envy and strife. What is strife? fighting, right? It's striving, it's tension, it's wrestling, it's competition. I'm not in competition with you. I'm glad. One of the things I appreciate about our church is that we've got so much biblical knowledge here, which keeps me on my toes. Not that I'm envious or jealous, because it's through years of study and diligence in your Bible study and walking with God. But it challenges me. I can't be lazy when it comes to teaching. Right? I remember early, of course, when Brother Terry was still here. And I knew that if I got to the door and I had said something off, he would let me know. I wasn't mad about that. I appreciated that. And sometimes it simply was, I think two or three times it happened, but it was just a simple thing of, you know, who is a man after God's own heart in the Bible? David. Well, I think one time I said Daniel. He caught it. And so I heard about it, right? Not a bad thing. Okay? And so we're critical thinking. I know that in the congregation we have biblical knowledge. In fact, theology, you know, understanding of God and the Word. So I can't be lazy in my Bible study. I can't be lazy in my teaching. I can't be. Because it would be fraudulent. No. I understand. And you've used it in a positive way. I'm not saying it can't be used in a positive way. We're not using it in a positive way here. So this way, he's talking about envy and strife. He's talking about jealousy, which is negative. He's talking about competing. Again, having to have that edge above. And he's saying that when we're intimidated, when we know that somebody else has got an edge over us and it's negative toward guys, I know that there are people in this room who are smarter than I am, better educated than I am, been studying the Bible longer than I have, been taught. There's a phrase I heard used in Bible college about a pastor, and he said, about that pastor, he said, he's forgotten more than I've known. Right? Why? Because he had lived a long time. As long as we don't let that intimidate us and put us into some negative competition, it's a good thing to know that there are smarter people around us, more biblically wise. But when we use that with a chip on our shoulder to try to prove something, I'm not saying I'm trying to prove something. I'm glad we can come in here and open the Bible and just open it up, word by word and line by line. That's what we're doing. I know that's not what other churches do. I know that other churches, other pastors and teachers spend a lot of time, you know, in the psychology books and all of that stuff. And, you know, and they take a couple of verses and then they try to help people in that way. That's not what we do here. We use the Bible. That Pahokee translation. I know. The Pahokee translation. Simplicity. Right. We can never exhaust the Bible, and we understand it in light of our experience, which means that if I'm going through something now, when I read the Bible, it speaks to me in a certain way for today. in 10 years when I'm going through something different, I can read the same text and get something else out of it that's useful for that day. It's sharper than any two-edged sword, the Bible says. It cuts right through us. It removes all of the covers and all of the facades and gets right down to the soul. And that's the beauty of what God has done. It has, with over 40 authors, under the inspiration of God, God led the words that were written. And it doesn't change, but we see it differently. It speaks to us differently. Why? Because it's God speaking to us through the Word. Right. We give them the ingredients and let them make their own cake. And sometimes we show them, and the mission of the church is to show them what the cake should look like when it's finished. Right? That's what we're supposed to do. All right? If we need instructions. And if we burn it, start over. But he says where there's envy and strife, there's confusion. If we have envy and strife between us, where we can't get along, because, well, you're trying to run things, or you're trying to take over, or you're trying to... You know, the great thing about it is Jesus is the head of the church. I'm not. It's his church. It's our church. Right? And yes, I know there's certain leadership expectations, but I have ideas and I try to float those ideas. But if the church doesn't buy into it, I'm not going to push it. I'm going to just let God do his work. And because I know sometimes my ideas are early. And if I wait long enough, it'll come to pass. So I don't get in a hurry. I don't try to rush things. Verse 17, the wisdom that is, and by the way, in verse 16, where he says envy and strife, there's confusion in every evil work. Yes, he's talking about spiritual things. Yes, he's talking about the church. But think about the context of a home. Of a home where mom and dad or husband and wife are fighting over who's the boss. Right? That's a problem. That's why when you get married, y'all need to go ahead and choose who's going to be the boss for a start. I remember marrying a couple one time, and I asked them ahead of time. I said, well, you know, who's ultimately in charge? Well, we never disagree. We always agree. And I said, okay, all right. I'll play along for a minute. Let's talk this through. Let's say you don't agree. Who's going to make the final decision? Or what are you going to do? Maybe you don't do anything. Maybe you don't move forward. But, you know, somebody's got to say, hey, this is the deal. And we got to decide that ahead of time. Or at some point it's going to cause a problem. By the way, even when you do decide ahead of time, at some point it's going to cause a problem. Because we want to get our way. How many of you want to get your way? Right? We all do. That's why it's called our way. That's right. That's what I read. verse 17. Go ahead, Sister Lana. Right? That's it. That's it. You got to be persistent. And what a beautiful polytrees it is, right? There you go. But I've got a note I wrote here next to this that says submission. Submission. How many of you have ever given in when you thought that it was the wrong decision? Why did we do that? Because we're submissive. Because we love. Submission. Definitely not. Verse 17, I want you to read this word by word. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated. What does that mean? Entreated. Can I question you? Can I question why are we doing it this way? Can I question, why do you think this is the right way to do it? Can I question, why do you think we should do this now? Can I question? If I can't question it, it's not easy to be entreated. If I can't question it, if I can't get all the information, if we're hiding something, if we're being deceitful, if we're not being honest, you see that? But wisdom is pure, peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy. You know, it's so important. And I'm careful about what I say, but when we're too emotional in our decisions, in our expectations, we get hurt. But when we get the emotions out of it, and just try to do the right thing, want the right thing, but get our emotions out of it, it goes a lot easier. Without partiality, without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness, look at what he says, is sown in peace of them that make peace. Right? So what are our intentions, motivations? What's the driving force? What's the goal? And, you know, there are things in the church, excuse me, that we talk about along the way, and we kick an idea out there and float it and see if it works. But really, it comes back to this: what is the purpose of it? Is what are we really going to try to accomplish by this? Whether it's, you know, a fellowship hall or dividing classrooms or extending the sanctuary or a generator or a sign or, you know, paint. I mean, by whatever it is, what really is the goal? What is the point of doing it? And that's why we can have a conversation without getting mad about it. It's not that I want to get my way, right? And hopefully it's not that way if you disagree with me. Like my wife says, pouty Derek. I'm not going to pout about it. I'm just going to put it in God's hands and see what he does. And sometimes, guess what? Sometimes I have bad ideas. Sometimes I'm wrong. Sometimes when I look at, there was something in the last few weeks, And I wanted something to be done, and I wanted it to be done right now. And then 2 weeks later, I'm like, I don't even want to do that. Right? See how that works? Sometimes it's just an idea, and we want our way without really investigating it all. And so we got to mainly be looking for the outcome, the purpose, the function. Comments, questions, criticisms. Let's take a break.